Hey everybody, it's June 29th, 2022. Welcome to our almost weekly, semi-weekly podcast show where we talk about drone news and information and general drone topics. It's kind of all over the place because it's just like me, it's got serious ADD. So this week we're going to be talking about Finn did his advanced online exam, and we're going to talk about how that went and what is some thoughts he has on it. And just get a perspective from someone that's just done it fresh and recent to share like what it's like. And we're going to go through our, we just had our community Zoom call for the week, talk about that, what we talked about this week. We're also going to bring up foreign pilot SFOCs and we'll see what the process is. We're going to revisit it. We'll screen share here a little bit. And we've also got a ParaZero. It's a parachute for a Mavic 2. So we're going to take it apart. I haven't even opened the boxes yet, so hopefully I got a good deal. And I bought it used. We're going to set it up. We're going to open up the Mavic 2 that it's designed for, and then we're actually going to register it during the podcast here. So you'll see the process for registering a parachute. So my name's Ian.
This is I'm Finn.
Welcome to Coastal Drone Weekly Podcast. Okay, Finn. So, welcome. Let's talk about the advanced online exam. You just came in. You started studying for it last week, and before you talk, I'm going to pre-qualify this conversation. Finn is a commercial airplane pilot. He has experienced quite a bit of hours flying, and he's working towards his instructor rating. Right. So that's part of the reason we love having Finn on the team is he's in the aviation world, very strong knowledge. So the conversation is going to be from the perspective of someone coming from the aviation world and doing the drone exam, right? So his results are not going to match everyone else's results. I don't want you to feel discouraged or fearful, right? We're here to help. That's part of the job. We have the knowledge. We're here to share it, and we're happy to share it with you. But I really want to hear how the exam went for Finn and what his thoughts were. So take it away, man.
So I got 84%. I took it a couple days ago on the 27th. It was the 29th now. I got 84%. 80, of course, you need to pass.
Right.
And
how many questions is it?
It's 50.
Okay.
So you can get 10 wrong.
Oh. Yeah.
Is a way to think about it, right?
That's true. Yeah. I don't do math.
Well, yeah. So there's 8 sections: air law, RPAS airframes, human factors, meteorology, navigation, flight ops, theory of flight, and radio telephony. I got perfect on 2 of them, which would be meteorology and navigation. So there's the fixed wing pilot coming through. Mm-hmm. So, and I got 1 or 2 wrong on everything else. So all in all, a pretty average showing, I'd think, for like I didn't have like one that was super weak. Okay. Now I know for if you're writing TC exams for aircraft, you have to get a certain amount per section, but I don't think that's the case here.
Well, it's just like you said. It's, I guess you could say 10 wrong, right?
Yeah, 10 wrong, and if there's 5, well, there's 5 RPAS questions. If you get all 5 wrong, I think you can still pass the
scrape
exam.
By.
Yeah, scrape by. I would not recommend doing that.
No.
So the 2 interesting questions I kind of wanted to talk about because this is one of them was a specific drone one. And
before you do that, just so that we preface this, because this is a public forum, right? Transport, you are not to record. You are not to share the questions, the content of the questions with anyone. It's completely private. So before we set ourselves up for anything that we're not sharing the results or specific questions, this is information about them. We can discuss the learning topics and the testing objective of the question, like the reference that it's going to. So if it's a question about hypoxia, right, you would then let's talk about what is hypoxia. So
So one of the questions that was drone specific I'll try and be careful here. It was about electric motors and how they operate.
Okay.
Specifically their limitations. So why don't we talk about a little bit about limitations of electric drone motors?
Okay.
So, you know, they'll have an RPM limitation, they'll have an outside air temperature limitation, and they'll have their own overheating limitation. So Those are one of those things was asked on my test, so we can discuss all of them.
Yeah. So, in Wakey's talk about systems and airframes for drones, there is a KV rating, and I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm going to look it up. And what it is so there's, I'm looking here, DC motors. It's not a DC motor. It's, I want KV rating. So that's a good website, Rotor Drone. And so like a KV of 2000. So too many ads, and I'm recording my screen, so you'll all be able to see what I'm looking at here as we talk, but it's the constant velocity of a motor. And I'm just reading what's on here. Yeah, they're saying, like, and it's good to important note, it's not kilovolts. KV is a constant velocity, so it's the opposite. It's not a small K, it's a big K. And it's a number of RPM that a motor turns when it's given 1 volt. So at 1 volt, this thing says here it's a KV of 2,000, means at 1 volt of power, it's given, it'll give 2,000 RPM back, right? So at full battery voltage, if it's a 2,000 KV motor, at 11, or here in the example, it's saying if it's a 980, so 1,000 times 11 volts is 10,800, right? 980 times 11.1. So if you had a 1,000 kV motor at 10 volts, it's 10,000 RPM.
It's a lot of RPM.
It's a lot of RPM. So these are typically like racing drones type motors. So the kV rating is based on the voltage going to the motor. And then the rating, it has to do with the windings inside. So the more windings are, the more volt, the higher the KV rating is, I believe. It's torque. Torque is determined by the number of winds on the armature and the strength of the magnet. So it's a combination of magnet strength and armature. The fewer winds and thicker wire will take more amps, but it takes more volts to spin faster. Right. So you'll have a lower KV rating, but it'll take more power. So it's a bigger, stronger motor.
Right. So another question that's arising from motors is, and maybe you could go to you can find like maybe the Mavic 3's POH online as I'm setting this up. Because one of the things that drones often have is a outside air temperature limit. Now, this isn't on the test because it's specific to the drones, but this is a thing that we're going to have to know, especially, you know, we're sitting here in last week of June, going into July. A couple days ago, it was outside air temperature in where I live was 35 degrees. It's probably even hotter because Ian lives further inland than I do. I live right by the water, so.
Look at you.
So it's a little bit cooler at my place than it would be at his, so. I think off the top of my head, I think maybe the Mavic 3's outside air temperature limit is around 40 degrees Celsius.
So where would we find that in the flight manual as I'm looking forward here? I know where it is. Where would we find it?
It would be in limitations without having a manual in front of me or having...
DJI likes to call it flight environment.
Flight environment. There you go.
And that's not going to be the same for every RPS manufacturer. I'm just looking for it. There it is. Flight environment requirements. So, and this is kind of a flight review. We typically, like one of our requirements is you need to know the limitations of your drone, right? Not only for the flight review, even as a basic pilot, you need to know what the limits of your drone are, because if you're outside of the limits, there's an argument that says you're now violating CARS 900.06, the don't be an idiot rule, because you're flying beyond the wind limits of your drone. You're flying in heavy rain. That rain could get into the controller and cause... a lot of havoc. The drone could fly away. It could do something uncommanded. So DJI, I've got on my screen here now. It's a prompt for the editor, by the way. it's saying here, it's a flight environment requirements. Do not use the aircraft in severe weather conditions, including wind speeds exceeding, this is the Mavic 3, by the way, it's 12 meters per second, snow, rain, and fog. Only fly in open areas. Tall structures and large metal structures may affect the accuracy of the onboard compass and GNSS. It's recommended to keep the aircraft at least 5 meters away from structures, which is an interesting number. Why is that?
Because it's in meters.
But why 5 meters? Why does that pop out?
Oh, because that's where you're going to start to get the sideways ground effect.
And
because that's the wingspan of the drone.
Well, that's good. it's not the answer I was looking for, but it's probably possible. I was thinking about safety assurance declaration.
Oh, right. Right? Yeah.
So the Mavic 3 is only rated to up to 5 meters away from people. And that'll kind of go into our segue about the parachute. But avoid obstacles, crowds, high voltage power lines, trees, and bodies of water. It's recommended to keep the aircraft at least 3 meters above water because water is magnetic to drones. You get below that, the ground sensor has no idea where it is because it's reflective, it's vision-based. It does at a certain altitude, the GPS kind of becomes not reliable enough, so it switches to vision and proximity to the ground. So lots and lots of stories of new drone pilots flying their drone out over water, and the drone starts landing itself. Plunk. What else? Oh, electromagnetism. Battery performance. So environmental factors such as air density and temperature. So density altitude. What's that?
Density altitude is pressure altitude corrected for temperature.
Okay.
So it's if you take the altitude you are above ground level and correct it for the differences in pressure that happen every day, and then you correct that because warmer air will be less dense. So you have, if there's less air pressure and it's warmer, you're going to have a higher density altitude, which is actually lower air density. So it's kind of a confusing term. But if you have high density altitude, there's less air for the propellers to kind of chew.
Less chewy air.
So in not unsafe scenarios, what you're going to do is you're just going to burn your battery out because the aircraft is going to have to work harder to produce the same amount of lift. But if you're at extremely high density altitude, you might say you're like on a hill, like say you're doing some flying in the mountains for forestry. You take off, you fly down the mountain and you're at high density altitude. You hit altitude up to come back to where you are. Your drone might not have enough juice to climb.
Exactly.
And then you're either going to have to go on a long walk down the mountain.
Been there.
Or you're going to lose the drone altogether, or you're going to put it in an unsafe scenario where it doesn't have a spot to safely land and it could hurt someone or damage someone's property.
Yeah. And it's so if you want to experience what high density altitude flying is like, get your battery really cold to the point where it's sagging in voltage. Which is obviously really bad for the battery and it damages the battery. So don't do it. But this is a scenario that also is like high density altitude flying because I made this mistake and this is a good learning experience. I had my drone in the front of my car. I have a Tesla, so there's a front trunk. And we were driving up into the mountains and it was cold. My drone was in the front. It was cold. I put the batteries in. The drone was above the minimum operating temperature, but it was still cold. I think it was like 0 or maybe -2, or the drone wasn't frozen or below 0. Fire it up. It takes off fine. Climb up. I get a low voltage warning, and the drone is now going downwind, almost in a flyaway. This is a Mavic Mini, so not a big, powerful drone to start with. And it starts descending because I get a maximum power reached, or maximum power limit exceeded error. And I'm just trying to get down low, thinking it's a headwind problem. And no, it was because it was so cold, the cells were dropping voltage and the motor RPMs were dropping as a result because it's trying to run the computer, trying to run the vision or whatever. And it's also trying to run the GPS, all these different things, plus keep the motors in the air. And the pack was so cold that it just didn't have the juice to do it, even though it showed 100% when I took off. So it just quickly lost voltage. So the drone ended up landing itself on the ground because it just didn't have enough power to stay in the air. Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at the environmental limitations of a drone, I like to think about it this way. Now, drones don't have certificates of airworthiness, but aircraft do. And this is how I think about it with aircraft. If an aircraft we call the manual in aviation the POH. It stands for Pilot Operating Handbook. If you exceed the limits laid out in the manual, your certificate of airworthiness is no longer valid. So if you imagine your drone as having a imaginary certificate of airworthiness, mm-hmm. and you say it's 45 degrees outside air temperature, and which is if that's outside of the parameters of your drone, then your imaginary certificate of airworthiness has been validated and you shouldn't go flying.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a good way of thinking about it. Imagine your drone has an imaginary certificate of airworthiness.
Yeah.
And try and and try and keep it within.
Well, and it's the same as not complying with the maintenance requirements for your drone.
Exactly.
Right. So if you disregard the flight manual for any aircraft, it's probably, is it CAR 600 that deals with airworthiness?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
But yeah. So you are disregarding a Canadian aviation regulation that is set out that specifies you must comply with the flight manual of an aircraft. Yeah. And because what I'm getting at is CYRs, Class F Restricted Airspace, applies to all aircraft. And that it says in the interpretation in the Aviation Information Manual that drones are aircraft, including micro drones.
Yes.
So if you disregard the flight manual for any aircraft, there is a regulation against that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of deep minutia there that potentially becomes an issue. So let's move on from that. Did you have another like standout question that really?
Let me look through. Oh yes. So coming back to that, drones are considered aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
There are specific CARs that are related to where aircraft can go, specific to different things. Forest fires, CYRs, or different things. And national parks,
mm-hmm.
Prisons.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion to students out there is to look back over the different types of airspace where all aircraft are not allowed.
So like Class F CYR.
Class F CYR. And specifically ones where there's like an implied height to that you can fly over. So prisons would be an example of most prisons. Their restriction is 1,500 feet, the one in Mission is 1,500 ASL. But
yeah.
So just keep that in mind, because there is some standard numbers that you should have, that you should be able to regurgitate off the top of your head.
And here's a good point that it kind of goes back and forth, and I've got it on my screen now, the Designated Airspace Handbook.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at a map and you're looking at it and it says CYR 141,
mm-hmm.
right? I can go into the DAH or Designated Airspace Handbook and go search for CYR 141. I know that number because I use it a lot potentially in flight reviews.
Which one is that one?
CYR 141. So that's the Matsqui Abbotsford Prison, which is directly east of the runway. This is actually also in one of our YouTube videos about reading maps. So it's a much deeper dive into this. But the one thing I wanted to point out is those ceilings in the Designated Airspace Handbook are to above sea level.
Yeah.
So in this case, this one's surface to 300 feet.
Yep.
It's 100 feet above ground.
Yeah.
So technically, in a bubble, all other considerations aside, you could fly above it. You risk violating privacy laws, though, I would imagine. This is my notion and hypothetical, that privacy laws would be a concern because there's a reasonable expectation of privacy behind prison walls. So not to mention setting off a lot of alarm bells. So it's probably a bad idea to do.
You know, when you're doing your flight, I do my flight training out of Pitt Meadows. There's a prison in Mission as well, and we fly over it fairly often. And you can fly over it if you're over 1,500 feet ASL.
Mm-hmm.
The instructors will always recommend you don't do it anyways.
It's funny because I've been harassed. I was doing a job in that specific prison airspace. I had permission to be there with a drone. I had four planes come over top of me and do spins right over top of that airspace.
Yes, people do it. It's recommended to not do it, but that's also around Stave Falls, which is where you do.
Yeah.
Which is where you practice. So
they're probably just a little bit offset from where the normal practice area is.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, Designated Airspace is a great place to look for more information about, like it's this one, it's a circle. So you've got the radius. Actually, it's a pill shape. So you've got two center points with a radius around those center points. The altitude's there, who to contact to get permission to fly in that airspace if you need to.
Yep.
And other things. So, and then also, like, one of the big points is knowing the difference between CYA and CYR and also CYD.
And then, Ian, I'll ask you a flight instructor question.
Uh-oh.
So you're looking on your map. You're doing a flight near like Comox area. You look and there's a CYR.
Mm-hmm.
And you look it up in the airspace handbook, and it says active via NOTAM.
Mm-hmm.
How would you find out if that's active or not?
So, first off, a NOTAM is a notice to air missions, or used to be notice to airmen, if you're Googling it. And it's a notice that's put out through Nav Canada that tells you anything that's going on. That's a short notice or a long-term notice of something that's changed. So if it's active by NOTAM, what that means, if you go to the local flight information region, so you can go electronically is the best way to do it. I personally like using notammap.com. That is interpreted, parsed data from Nav Canada's website, which is the CFPS, the Consolidated Flight Planning Service
Alpha
website.
Alphanumeric Recall is its full name. CFPS Alphanumeric Recall.
Ugh. So many acronyms. Why did I get into this industry? So if you go to the CFPS or NOTAM map, you will be able to look up the flight information region for Comox, did you say?
Which is Kamloops.
Okay, yeah. So Kamloops FIC, you would dig down and then you would find there would be something that says Comox, CYR, whatever.
Whatever number it is.
Active during this time and date.
And it'll give you the times between which it's active. Yeah. It'll give it to you in UTC, so you'll have to convert it, but
yeah,
it'll give you the times.
So like we're -7 right now.
-7, -8 in the winter.
Yeah. And so that will be valid for a certain amount of time. It'll say when it was issued, and it'll say when that NOTAM expires.
Yes. And this specific one that I have in my mind, that's where the Canadian Armed Forces does submarine stuff, parachute drops, and just general, like, you know, they'll bring out the helicopters and do stuff. So you really don't want to bust that airspace if the Canadian Army calls you because you've busted their airspace.
Someone's in trouble.
You're in trouble. You're not going to have a fun weekend. Let me just say.
So I'm just looking for the actual border. I'm in Comox right now on the map.
I might be a bit far north. It might be a little bit further south than that. If I had my VTA, I could tell you.
Yeah.
Sorry, if I had my map.
Okay, here it is. So it's actually between Texada Island and Hornby Island.
That's right.
And so we're talking about CYA. Oh, so it's an advisory. It's not an R.
Oh, is it not? There is an R somewhere on the island.
Okay.
But
there's a bunch of blasting areas as well.
There's a bunch of blasting areas.
So CYA 124 bracket M, military training
or
activity. It's from the surface to 1,000 feet above sea level. Occasionally, it goes up to 5,000 feet by NOTAM.
By NOTAM.
Continuously active otherwise. So it's always to 1,000 feet. But if there's something going on that they need the extra 4,000 feet to up to 5,000, then they'll publish a NOTAM. But yeah, it's a CYA. It's an advisory. So you can fly straight through it at 500 feet above sea level, because you're not over a built-up area, right? So it's not the best, but if the weather's low, you can. Or if you're a drone pilot, you could fly out there, although it's so far out over the water that I would argue you're beyond line of sight at that point.
Probably.
So.
Unless you're in a boat.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay.
Shall we talk about flight reviews, seeing as we're kind of asking questions about flight reviews?
Yeah. So we just had our internal community call. We'll probably pull some highlights for that for the YouTube channel as well at some point. But obviously, community members get first crack at it, and they get a chance to see it live and unedited, or the unedited recording will be on our community. So if you're not already a member, I encourage you to get over to that. it's community.coastaldrone.co, or just right off our website. There's a link to it. But we talked about flight reviewer confidence and standards. And what came of that was we do an annual flight reviewer meeting with all of our flight reviewers. So we have over 30 reviewers across Canada.
And 31 when I'm able to do it.
Exactly, in a few months here. And we're bringing them on constantly, and we try and set a pretty high standard, right? So aviation knowledge is critical. Industry knowledge is critical, right? You have to you have to be able to cook what you sell.
Yeah.
So, or whatever analogy you want to use. I'm terrible at coming up with them on the fly. So you want to be able to have confidence in what you're reviewing, that you're coming from a position of knowledge and experience. So we talked a little bit about TP15395, which is a flight reviewer's guide issued by Transport Canada. Transport Canada has the facility to review your review process and make sure that you're meeting the standard. They also have a facility for doing a standardization seminar. And then the candidates have the ability to raise concerns with Transport if you felt that there was a heavy level of bias, if the review was unfair, if there was any concerns or poor treatment. And I make it critical that the start of all our reviews, I go through that and say, look, you can share your results with Transport Canada. It's entirely up to you. Like, otherwise, we keep them private. And if you have concerns of how the review went, I encourage you to call them and have them review me, because I love being told when I'm wrong. Otherwise, I wouldn't be married.
So, editor, cut that.
Hi, honey. I do. When it comes to this kind of stuff, we're here to learn, right? We're here to benefit from it. We're all in a collaborative environment and trying to, like, the ultimate goal of this is safety and being realistic. So the flight review is a review of your SOPs and your knowledge, right? The flight ability is also part of it. You need to be able to safely operate the drone you plan to use. So that's part of it. But the emphasis is definitely on knowledge and procedures. So we have a script, the Coastal Drone, all of our reviewers work from. It's standardized, put a lot of effort into it and made sure that it summarizes the flight reviewer's guide standards as best as possible. We've also ensured that we always test to an advanced environment standard. So we have a mock site scenario that we have all of our candidates go through that goes across Canada. There's 6 or 7 different locations, and they're all advanced environments. It's possible with an advanced drone, but there are questions in there that if you're getting your flight review done in the middle of nowhere in Class G airspace, and you wouldn't potentially have to consider those for your flight review, and you may potentially not. The reality is you're getting your advanced certificate, so you can fly effectively anywhere in Canada that isn't restricted airspace. Mm-hmm. So you need to be tested to that standard, mm-hmm. and you need to understand that. So it's not impossible if you're prepared, study, and go through the preparation documents, but it's not an easy test either, right? It's meant to be, because it's a privilege to have your pilot certificate. Mm-hmm. It's not a guaranteed thing. You need to study. You need to do a good job. So we've done that. And so basically, long story short, as a conversation progressed, we've decided we're going to try and do we do an annual AGM right now, and then we have direct contact with everyone. So if I hear something from someone or there's guidance or suggestions, we've got open channels for that, because mm-hmm. Our reviewers are all over Canada. But we're going to try and get together and do another group call, because there is a plan for there to be a standardization seminar this fall at the Aerial Evolution of Canada show in Calgary. I had posed it to the organizers in January, February, and I really want this to happen. Hopefully it does. Hopefully we can get reviewers from multiple organizations across Canada, because there's something like 500 flight reviewers across Canada now that are active. So it would be great to have an opportunity for everyone to ensure that we're all operating at a good standard.
Mm-hmm. And right? just for kind of context, you mentioned in the thing, and for commercial aviation, the people who did like my commercial pilot exam, they have to attend a recurrent seminar once a year, and they get checked up like every 6 months. They can be checked up to every 6 months on yep. their procedure, and if they are found that they are not doing it to standard, they're done.
Like, yeah, you can't fly. Yeah. Period. So there's something called ACPs, or mm-hmm. authorized check pilots. They are also Transport Canada delegated representatives. They're not members of Transport. They're independent contractors that hold this authority. they have to go through quite a bit of recurrency. There's flying. There's a check ride of their check ride. I think it's either biannually or annually. And then they do recency seminars as well.
And for fixed wing aircraft, they have to be the highest level of flight instructor, I think, to do it.
A class one.
Yeah, they have to be a class one flight instructor.
I'm not sure about that on the rotary side.
Because you don't have the same setup anyways, right?
It's same but different. Same but different, yeah. Quite a few of my friends are ACPs on the rotary side, and they're not necessary. I think a few of them don't have instructor ratings.
I might actually be wrong about the now that I say it out loud, I might be incorrect about that. I just know the guy who did mine is a class one flight instructor.
Well, and he's a flight test examiner.
He's a flight test examiner. He did my commercial flight test.
Okay. So look forward to that. We'll be doing more about that in the future. And probably it'll be in camera to start with our flight reviewers, just so that if there's any concerns, we can deal with that. But we'll certainly hopefully pull some snippets of information that we'd love to share with the community and at large out of that. Obviously, the community first. So it's not a plug, but it is a plug for the community. So flight reviews, this kind of segues into the next topic. Foreign pilots and getting their special flight operation certificate. So a quick rundown of the process, and I'll bring it up on my computer here as I'm talking. But
I've had multiple emails about this in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and so we've done quite a bit of this, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The rules changed early 2021. But it's fairly straightforward. And so I'm going to have to qualify this segment with I've reached out because I have some questions. And this is what we've done and also what the guidance is from the material. Plus, I've got a bit of a hypothetical interpretation for it. And maybe I will share it. Maybe I won't in this conversation.
Yes. And the other qualification, it is June 29th, 2022, 12:07 Pacific Daylight Time.
Things change.
It could change this afternoon.
Yeah. So if you are a foreign pilot, if you're a foreign drone pilot or a foreign citizen or not a permanent resident, if you're not have proof of citizenship in Canada, so they call it a foreign operator, not a citizen, permanent resident in Canada, or a corporation incorporated by or under the laws of Canada or a province, because corporations can own aircraft and register them, then you, for the specific of what we're doing, if you want to fly or operate or own a drone, so this is where the minutia kicks in. I said fly, operate, or own. What I mean is own and register. If you want to own or register an RPAS in Canada, you need an SFOC number as a foreign operator. So foreign operators coming to Canada, you have to do the same process as domestic operators when it comes to getting your pilot certificate. To get your basic pilot certificate, you do the online exam. Once you've done that, you apply for an SFOC showing proof of your exam results. You get a TC number and a PC number. You submit that. You submit the serial number of your drone, the description of your drone, where you plan to fly, what you plan to do, general expectations. You can apply for up to 12 months for a foreign pilot, I believe, because that's when all SFOCs expires after 12 months. and then you'll get a number, and you affix that number to your drone. That is your certificate of registration for the drone, because you as a foreign citizen cannot register a drone in Canada. You can get your pilot certificate, but you can't register your drone. So, and this is conversational, right? So this is going to be subject to clarification a little bit. So we're sharing our learning process on this one a little bit, but the other side of it, and hopefully this encourages some discussion. So if you need to get your advanced pilot certificate, so if you want to fly in controlled airspace closer than 100 feet from people, potentially over people with the right drone, or at events, or apply for more advanced operations an SFOC begets an SFOC, you're going to need to do a flight review in addition to passing the online advanced exam. You don't have to do the basic exam. You can skip right to the advanced. So you do the advanced online exam. you apply for your SFOC to register the drone in Canada that you own. They will want to see your advanced online exam results, your TC and your PC number. You will also need to provide proof that you've booked a flight review because you intend to do advanced operations. And you'll need to have a safety assurance declaration for the drone as well. So ideally, you're wanting to register something that's already on the list, so like a Mavic series or something that's already on the safety assurance list. If you're registering a drone that you've custom built, you would have to provide the manufacturer's safety assurance declaration as well so that you can get that on the SFOC. Once you've done that, you then affix that number to the drone. The drone then can be used for the purposes of the flight review under basic rules or advanced if it's approved for it. And then once you successfully complete the flight review, we'll upload the results to Transport as flight reviewers. You pay an additional processing fee for that, and then you'll be able to apply for an advanced pilot certificate to use in conjunction with your SFOC. So here's my discussion questions that I've put out. Can a foreign pilot get a pilot certificate in Canada without having to go through a foreign pilot SFOC if they are to operate a domestically owned drone by a third party? And this is a question that I've put out, and we don't have an answer for it yet. So I'm going to end the conversation there. Because in theory, based on what I've just said, my first thought is that potentially you could rent a drone and just get a letter of authorization for the drone. Because I rent drones all the time. Sometimes it's better to rent a drone than it is to buy it if the technology is always changing. Like, you need to look at your business case and see if you need something on short notice. If you need a Matrice tomorrow, it might not be, like, if you don't have a contract.
You're saying that almost like you needed a Matrice tomorrow last week.
Yeah, and yesterday. So, yeah, it's sometimes better to rent drones than it is to buy them. And as a Canadian, I get a letter of authority saying that I am responsible for the drone, mm-hmm. right? I add it to my insurance.
The liability swaps yep. to you, so if yep. you boof it into someone's house, then they sue you instead of...
It's on me.
Instead of the company that you rented it from.
I kind of think that's the way the answer is going to go, but we're definitely going to follow up on this. Mm-hmm. So, and I know we should probably do a little bit more research before we do these podcasts. Like, we should not think of these questions 20 minutes before the call. But
well, also in this case, we've tried to do the research. We've been working on this for a week now, and yeah. so far the roadblock is it's not to blame Transport Canada, but they're
task saturated.
They're task saturated, and they haven't provided clarification yet.
Well, and partly. I think one of them, my email got lost in the outbox and my spam filter failed.
It's so okay.
That's on me.
Whatever. It's fine.
We love you. okay. So that is that for foreign operators. So stay tuned for more on that one. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's sitting in front of me and you.
And me. So.
What is this?
What you've got or what I've got? Because what I've got is a Mavic.
You've got a beat-up Pelican case with a Mavic 2 in it that has seen some things.
Is the Mavic 2 just as beat up?
No, it's okay.
The dome is cracked.
Well, that's the dust protector for the gimbal. So this is our workhorse Mavic 2. It's seen a lot of different things over its life. Mm-hmm.
And it's going to see some more.
We need to use it to do some potential downtown operations where it is unavoidable to be more than 16 and a half feet away from people horizontally. So we need to go into an over people operation, which this drone by default does not have a safety assurance declaration to do. So how do we get around that? How do we stay compliant and stay legal? Well, that's where a parachute comes in, because a multi-rotor doesn't have... Don't step on my glasses later. A multi-rotor, there doesn't really have... It's not an inherent fail-safe, right? So if it's a fixed wing and the engine dies, well, you can still glide away from people and sacrifice the airframe. Mm-hmm. For a multi-rotor, it's going to go straight down, right? So para-zero, and again, just like every good podcast, we do zero research and... buy it and then you get to experience it with us. So I bought, this is a Safeair Para Zero designed for the DJI Mavic series. This one is good for the Mavic Pro, Mavic 2 Pro, which is what this is, the Mavic 2 Zoom, or the Mavic 2 Enterprise, as long as you don't have any of the accessories up on top of it, because then it could be in the way. So like there's the RTK, the PA speaker, or the strobe light. So let's see what's inside this box first. And this is used. I bought it used at 1/5 of its retail value. The person I bought off wasn't a commercial operator. They said they never had to deploy it. It is repackable, though, which is one nice thing, so it's not a one and done. And they've used it. They know it works, but they've never had to deploy it. So, inside, you've got the parachute module, and then there's these four arms. There's a USB-C port and a bunch of other ports, and then there's a big spring.
And the cutest remove before flight tag I've ever seen. Look at that. It's so small. That's adorable.
And this is the body tether. So I'm not going to – I know it's spring-loaded, and there's a electronic relay to launch it. So I don't want to overhandle it. It's got a big on-off switch for arm and disarm, so that's good. Let's leave it off. Mm-hmm. So we don't have parachute in the face. Okay, there's an arrow pointing forward. That is a good sign. Why does this feel like it's too small? What am I doing wrong here? Because it can't interfere with the sensors. Mm-hmm. Right? So this goes underneath the belly and around.
That we know.
And we will be going through the manual.
We literally did not look at this beforehand. That was a error.
Well, no, I like to look at things and understand them blind.
Okay.
But so it's very tight. That looks like it fits right there.
Are you missing maybe some mounting pads that are sticky?
Possibly. There's an over center mounting mechanism. That's why this is all wacky. Okay. I got it.
So this box that I have here was the remote control. So I'm guessing, my best guess is that this is the remote control. It looks like you just clip it to your belt loop.
I turned it on.
Nice. It just looks like you clip it to your belt loop. It's got a big red button on it, which I would imagine deploys the parachute in the event that you need to.
That safety catch is there for a reason. Okay. Okay, so there's an over-center ratcheting style system there. That goes like that, goes up, up and over, and that's can be tighter. So let's go 4. There we go. That's nice and solid. So it supports the weight of the drone from the top. That's the parachute section on, right? So it's not blocking the rear vision sensor or the side-to-side vision sensors. Mm-hmm. It is blocking the power button, so you would want to turn it on beforehand. It's not squeezing the buttons, so the battery's not going to come out. I bet there's something in it that says something about the vision system not necessarily being the best, because you look at how it sits back here.
If it gets bumped. Now, this was in the box as well. Where does that go? It looks like...
What is it?
I have no idea. It looks like a receiver of some description.
This is the alarm.
Mm.
So if you deploy, it also has to have an oral warning, so that people are aware that the drone is falling out of the sky
as it's coming down.
And also it's the remote activation, because that's a 900 megahertz transceiver. That's crossfire.
Yeah.
So they've basically got a button for arm and a button for alarm, I think, on there probably.
Right.
So this goes on here. It gets strapped to
somewhere
on here. And then here's the other part that's most important, is the ASTM number. So This one's ASTM-0443. This is the multi-$1,000 sticker.
Nice.
That makes this drone now. So we have to register this drone as a ASTM-compliant Para-0 mm-hmm. with the serial number of the drone, but it's a separate certificate of registration because once this parachute is on this drone is no longer just a Mavic 2 Pro. It is a Mavic 2 Pro, and there is a handy placement tool that shows you how you're supposed to put it on when you're not just rushing your way through it. What else is in here? There's a charging cable. Mm-hmm. There is a danger. There's a loaded spring inside. I don't see a manual.
It's Here, let me look for the manual.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring, I've got my screen still recording, and I'm going to bring up the drone management portal. And we're going to quickly go through how to register this. And we'll probably just, I'm going to bring up the Para-0 manual as well. Safe Air Mavic. Because I want to double check what serial number we're supposed to use. So I will log in. Okay, so we're going to register a drone. So what do we need to have? Right? Transport Canada rules are right here, ready to go. You must register any drone that's 250 grams to 25 kilograms. Benefits are, they don't talk about, if you don't do it, what the fines are, but they talk about the benefits. Yeah. So we're talking about carrot instead of whip here. But yeah, if you lose your drone, they'll be able to send it back to you.
Right.
If there's a recall in the manufacturer, they'll contact you. It's $5 to register. So let's go in here. Before we start, we need to take 3 minutes, blah, 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 purchase date, applicable, make, model, payment. So let's begin the registration. The drone was purchased, new, or used. Yes. So this is, it is a new drone to us because we've just, it's not something that we built, right? It's not a kit off the shelf for custom built parts. It is a manufactured drone. So that means it's already on the safety assurance declaration. So we're going to say we bought this. I think I picked it up last Friday is when I got it. Here's the question. It's a separate drone mm-hmm. from the other one. So there's two C numbers. Mm-hmm. Right, because you've got one for when the drone isn't the parachute and one when there is a parachute. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to put the existing C number on the registration. So we go to continue. Because if I did that, it would be like, well, this drone is still active. Someone else owns it. You own it. How are you trying to re-register the same drone you own? Mm-hmm. So we're going to go into what is the make and model. So we're going to go for Safe Air. Here we go. Para-0. And we want the Mavic 2 Pro with Safe Air Mavic and ASTM Professional Kit. Okay, so both. This is the ASTM Professional Kit. Mm-hmm. This is the Safe Air Mavic. Okay, what is the serial number? Is there a serial number on any of these for... That's the RC and the battery.
That thing, oh yeah. S/N, that's not the serial number?
It is a serial number, but I think it's for the...
Oh, for that.
This guy, which is it's a Baofeng radio. It's 3D printed. It's got the 3D printed Baofeng clip on the back. That's awesome. That is so cool. Don't take that through an airport. I you might have some explaining to do with that one. Take a look at what you think it looks like. Okay. There is a assembly number and a revision... Revision 3, and then I think this is the serial number. So we've got, yeah, let's go by this. Zero, so that's the revision 03. So then it's SF191, and we won't.
So just as Ian's doing this, I'm going to say that we installed this incorrectly. Just because I'm
impossible.
So these clips are supposed to go on the top of the drone, and then it clips to this clip. So you this has sticky.
Oh, so that the legs position exactly.
So the legs position exactly correctly.
That makes
sense. Every time. So you stick this to the top of your drone. It looks like there's a little latch on it, like just a you put on a twist latch. So then you do that, and then it's always in the same spot every single time. And it also gives a little bit more space between the actual device and the power button. So you actually might be able to at least stick a
pokey
pen,
thing,
a pen in there, and turn on the power.
Nice. Okay, I need to pay the bill. I am not a robot, as far as I know. And I'm going to pay with credit card. Stop recording my screen.
And you'll just say your credit card number out loud just for the podcast, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Members only, though. We'll post this in the community.
Okay. We now have a new certificate of registration. There's a refund policy. Basically, it's case by case. So, yeah, no. Oh, shoot. Okay, good. I hit back. Accidentally. Continue. Oh, I just got an email from transport for certificate. Okay, here we go. I've got my new registration. I'm going to print it. And so now we've got the new C of R for when the parachute is installed.
Yeah.
Right? The certificate of registration is just make sure your mic's closer to your face.
Yep.
So when the parachute is installed, we are good for near people within 100 feet, mm-hmm. over people within 16.4 feet, and controlled airspace. Okay, so we are basically good there. So now, did you find the link for the manual?
Yes, I did. Awesome. I just Googled the manual. So.
Oh, okay.
And I just Googled Para Zero Mavic Safe Air Manual, and I found it here.
Cool, because I want to know what's the minimum altitude that this thing needs to fly over people? Like, what are the conditions that we need to meet in order to fly this in over people? And you have...
So I'm just...
22% of my battery remaining.
Okay, so... Okay, it doesn't say it there. It says here the... The average measured descent rate with a drone with an open parachute is 12.8 feet per second.
Okay. I've always operated under the assumption that there's a minimum.
Because there needs to be, you need enough time for it to like catch, right?
And build up the energy.
Yeah. So let's see if I look through the manual here. Oh,
they've prevented you from removing the crossfire receiver so I can't go steal it from my FPV rigs. Handy. What does that button do? Or is that a flashlight?
Oh, well, here's some interesting. So I'm just in the specifications. So maximum, it has a maximum altitude, which is more, it is 19,700 feet ASL.
Okay.
The maximum speed is 72 kilometers per hour.
That's higher than I think the Mavic is.
But the maximum wind speed is 10 meters per second, so 19 and a half knots.
That is the same as the Mavic 2, so that's good.
It has to be operated between 0 and 40, which I think is the same.
Okay.
When the system is fully charged and kept above 15, flight is permissible at temperatures as low as minus 10.
Okay.
Which I think is the same as the Mavic.
Yep.
It does not, I have yet to find, so that does not mean it's not there, I have yet to find a minimum altitude.
Is there a normal procedures section? Like a checklist?
No checklist.
Oh. Ah. Okay. So you put this over top to place the things over the propeller holes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then that puts the parachute exactly where it needs to be so that the center of gravity isn't a problem. So.
Is this the ASTM version?
Yes.
Okay. So now I'm on the ASTM manual because there's two manuals. It looks like Mavic Parachute Manual and Mavic Parachute ASTM. So now let's see if there's something here. The minimum flight altitude defined by the ASTM is 19.02 meters.
20 meters. That, and so is that above ground?
It doesn't define it, but I would imagine that it's 20
or
feet
over people's
or
heads.
Over people. So
20 meters above people's heads.
Which is 63 feet.
Okay. So that's...
That's about what? The height of a five-story building?
No, not even. Or I think it's... Yeah. It's,
something like that.
It's generous. It's not super high. I would have thought at least 100 feet, so that's actually pretty low. So you can get fairly close to people.
Yep. Yeah, 60. It says 62.4 feet, so 63 feet. Okay. 65 feet.
Yeah, so you're, and that's minimum altitude, right? So you can stand, you can hover directly over top of a bystander, mm-hmm. someone not involved in your operation,
yep.
as long as your minimum above them is 62 feet. Mm-hmm.
And then if you're not directly above them, you can get a little bit lower.
Oh, sure. So what does that mean for takeoff and landing? What that means is you can take off and land like normal. You can yep. fly the drone like normal.
Yep.
But as soon as you come within that 5-meter radius column, right, so 10-meter diameter infinite column above a person's head mm-hmm. that is unprotected, you must be a minimum altitude of 60 meters, 60 feet.
60 feet, 20 meters.
20 meters, 60 feet. Okay. All right, so we're gonna actually go through the manual bit by bit here now. Make sure it's set up and installed properly and safely, because it has to be set up and there's probably testing. So we'll add some, we're going to do an actual video about this more than the podcast, but this was just, hey, we got this cool thing. Let's do the registration and show you the process.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, well, do you want to go through the manual now or?
I think for time,
I think we're running a bit long in the tooth here.
Yeah. So this is going to be a long episode anyway. Yes, it is. So we'll share that. Like, we'll go through the video and how to set it up, what it's like to fly, because I haven't flown with this on. Like, I want to know what's it going to do to wind resistance. Right. Yeah. So
here, let me check to see, cause I was looking at the other manual, cause there's two manuals. So be careful if you're,
so at this point, with that, we'll share all those findings in the next video, just for the interest of time here. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is like our almost weekly podcast at
almost.
This point. We're getting there.
We're
We've
getting
gotten
there.
The gear sorted out. I noticed our background went away after a while, but
that's
whatever.
Okay.
Please share your comments and your feedback in the chat below. Make sure that you like and subscribe. It means so much to us. We're trying to get over 1,000 subs. We just crossed 600, which means a lot. Like, it's hard work to build a channel. So I really appreciate your support there. Turn on the notifications. So we try and upload stuff, and we're not consistent. We're getting better, but we're not right now. So that way you'll get a notification right away when something's coming. We're going to obviously do the ParaZero is the next one we're going to talk about.
Yep.
We've done a bunch of work through the Remote Pilot Network recently that we're going to start sharing and talking about on our channel. So you'll mm-hmm. see some footage from that. And I did a little bit of traveling last week for some flight reviews and some advanced training. So I'm going to have a bit of a travel vlog for that as well. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned on the channel, stay tuned on social, make sure you're on the community. If you're looking to get certified and this is totally new to you and drones are totally new, check out our website, coastaldrone.co. We've got basic and advanced training. We've also got a course specific for complete beginners. It's the Mavic Mini Training Series. It's meant for just flying skills and where you can fly a micro drone, which is a great place to start. Mm-hmm. You can actually make money with them. And we've got some new courses coming out. We've got some other stuff that's going to be more internationally focused and business focused as well. So mm-hmm. stay tuned to that. And also, like I said, thanks for checking in. Have yourself a great week. Find us on social. We're at Coastal Drone Co. or hashtag Coastal Drone Co. Tag us in videos and photos that you think are cool. Tag us in videos and photos that you've taken that you want to share. We're happy to like and reshare them for mm-hmm. you too. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Have a good one.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.